I found him in a series of dreams where I was in a big house and slowly people got picked off and tortured and hurt and murdered, and I tried to fight him, but he was too powerful. He was giant and brutish, and so I would run out of the window. Just run as far as I could. One time, I'm running and I run, and somehow I climb up a very tall palm tree. It's a dream, so of course I'm much more powerful than in real life, where I couldn't. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I could do very well trying to actually climb a palm tree. But in my dream, I did that, and I was just sitting at the top in like sort of this nest of a fictitious type of tree, really. And I saw him coming, and he grew like a giant trying to grab me. And I was so afraid that I jumped into another tree and another tree, trying to climb higher and higher to get away. And at some point, this giant man with these icy, terrible eyes, he was unkillable, undefeatable, terrifying. He just pulls down the branches of the tree I had climbed, and I fell from the tree onto a shoreline. I was sitting in the sand and watching the water come back and forth, and this giant sat next to me, and he looks at me with his creepy fucking eyes, and I am terrified. I'm in tears, and I say, like, what do you want? Like, what are you gonna do? And he just looks at me, and he almost laughs, and he says, like, don't you know? Don't you understand? And I did not understand. I didn't understand. I was scared, and everything in me was activated to fight, to run, to get away, or if I couldn't overcome him, I just didn't know. I thought I was going to die fighting, but I ended up just waking up. It took me a hot minute to figure out this little creep was my animus. And the animus is a Jungian term for the inner man, as the anima is the inner woman. And an easy way to remember this for me is anima sounds like vagina, anima sounds like penis. That's how I remember to tell the difference. Just a little cheat code for ya. Anyway, this type of headbutting I was experiencing with this giant, massive, epically proportioned, undefeatable masculine figure that I was putting all of my rage and fear against. And in some dreams, he was this monumental, like, robot god with, like, titanium skin. And I was trying to, like, battle him, but I was, like, this tiny fly, like, trying to push against him, and he would just, every time, like, I would get in a battle, he would just laugh and be like, don't you understand? And I was just so raged out. I was like, no, I don't understand shit. I just want you to fuck off. So this is my inner man. He's a juggernaut, a bullheaded, fierce, undefeatable creature. And even in my inner avatar of my conscious self, I was still displaying these same characteristics, what do you call it? I can't stop, you know, if I feel like showing up for something, like I can't beat it out of me. You just can't. Which I know to be a fact because I've been beaten up many times. I'm just a very fierce little freak. So what the fuck am I talking about? You might be asking yourself, what's the point of me talking about any of this? And the point is the Emperor of the Tarot, number 4. The Emperor is the masculine, it's a highly masculine figure. Number 4, and you could think of number 4 like 4 legs on a table. The pillars that hold up a foundation, everything about it is like boxed off, cubed off, holding the boundaries. That's over there, this is over here, establishing self and holding the form. So sometimes I think of the progression of number 3, the Empress, into number 4 is the Empress is a forest, and the number 4 is a human being that enters the forest, cuts down the trees, starts to block off a little square of the forest that they build a fence around, and then they defend that area as their own. So I am already feeling the heat right now, all the pushback. And I find that as feminine as I am, and as much as I identify in the femme, my masculine attributes are pretty intense. So I found also the first time I started pulling up the lesson of the Emperor for myself in my life was when I first became a tarot reader, and I would do readings for myself constantly. And reading for myself, to be honest, is much more difficult than reading for another person, because part of the process of making a reading make sense is explaining it out loud. I believe that when you walk verbally and take the time to try to explain the message, that's when some revelations come out. That's when you're starting to connect it, at least for me. So when I'm reading for myself, I don't usually do that. I'll just look at the card and be like, okay. Like I kind of like expedite the concept. I just hold space for it in my head real quick and just be like, okay, this is the catalog of what I know about that. I can imagine its applications, moving on. But reading for someone else, it's more of an art form of the, you know, to be a tarot reader, that's a cumbersome title. And what it really means is you're skilled in the act of reading picture symbols for someone else. So part of that is just not present in reading for yourself, as I've said a few times now. But anyway, I was pulling the Emperor a lot for myself, and I'm like, what's up with this? And I'm like, okay, slowly started understanding, all right, I'm building my own empire. That's a grandiose title for what I'm doing, for sure, but it's you're working on something, you're establishing yourself in the world, you start to have boundaries around what you do and do not do, and you're also making claim to what your little empire is about. And then the progression from there goes into the minor arcana, such as 4 of Cups, which I interpret as a surprise coming out of the blue, but it comes to you because it knows where to go. So let's say that, you know, you're a post office and people suddenly start showing up to mail packages, and you're like, wow, business is finally blooming. But you have a sign outside for a service that is well known and needed. So that's, you know, anyway, I'll get to that later when we do the episode on the 4 of Cups, but for now, let's stick with the Emperor. I find that at the time, this was like before the Me Too movement. It was before gay marriage was legal. It was mildly different times. And, that's to say, there were still social leanings that were fairly misogynistic, and as there are now, that's still going on. But I found in my big titted, like valley girl slurs, my, you know, messy hair and my devil may care attire, I found that if I was knowledgeable in any subject and having a conversation with many different men, they would feel that they were the authority on it, even though they didn't really know what they were talking about. So if I knew anything about, I don't know, like medieval astrology, or I don't know, the religious practices of Haitians or anything, like they would just immediately be like, yeah, well, actually, I think, and you're like, yeah, you think, you don't know, because you don't have any idea what you're talking about. You're just making that up. Here are different points of interest. Not that I would say that directly, because I think that that's so very rude to say that directly to someone in a conversation, even if one has escalated to an argument. Disclaimer, I've totally said that to someone when pissed off. But I found that I kept like headbutting with these dudes, because I would get really into the concept of a conversation, and I realized that me as a woman, and I think that there's also some, honestly, I think that there was some classism going on there in some cases, but to not be respected, and I felt that there was an underlying push for me to just submit into the subservient role of, oh, that's so cool. Oh, you know about that? That's interesting. Oh, did you know actually this other thing? Like, you have to be like such a little butt kisser to have a fucking conversation with another adult. Oh, I'm already getting mad. Okay. So I realized that the part of me, oh my God, I can hear like people getting upset out there in the ether. Just before I even dropped the sentence, I could already feel it like bubbling up like a teapot, like spots a whistle. Okay. The part of me that was butting heads with other people wasn't the empress. It wasn't the high priestess. It wasn't the inner feminine archetype that is like embracing, receiving, creative, abundant. It was my exacting conqueror, the emperor. It was my inner man. It was like, oh, you want to have a pissing contest? Let's fucking do it. I'm going to crush you. which is the quality within me that is the emperor. And again and again and again, we are all on the fool's journey. It's within all of us, all of these archetypes, and we enter different phases in our lives where they come in full bloom and we have to explore them for ourselves. And it's elusive and confusing because we identify usually with like some sort of topical characteristic of one of the cards, but that's too stagnant. It's too small. And then often we'll find these external figures that will find ourselves at their mercy, like we're butting heads with, we're begging, we're desperate for, and depending on the situation. I mean, also, I've had experiences where I've read, I've done like a bunch of sessions for like straight up gangsters that were like, I'm like, dude, you need to stop fucking around. Like, you're looking for the inner empress in all of these women that you're sleeping with because you feel that you have to go run around chasing them because you're denying yourself the activation of the inner empress within you. And it's not because of any overt genderism. it's more that we are entire universes. We are all of these things within us. And the more that we section it off, the more that we are struggling with it, and we have to find it. We have to chase it around in the external world. So telling that to a man who's highly embodying the Emperor, who is a fucking gangster wearing like a big ass gold chain, who is, you know, up to some business, who is very, very, very much like an alpha and embodying that Emperor, that when you lean too hard in that character, that it doesn't feel balanced either, you know? So you look for that in the displaying of promiscuity, you know? So I feel like that somehow gets enmeshed in the concept of the Emperor. Sorry if you hear all this crinkling. Full disclosure, when I do these podcasts, I like to make my own sort of, I don't know what you call it, like a anti-sensory, like, or sensory deprivation cove. So I just, like, instead of water, I just, like, surround myself with pillows and put an eye mask on so I could just drop into my head so I could record. So anytime you hear, like, crinkling, I'm just, like, moving amongst these pillows. So that's what's going on. So the Emperor archetype, when you think of an alpha male who's like the shit, it's like that machismo energy where it's very like about having sex with lots of women and doing all this and being the boss. I think the having sex with many women is a derangement of out of balance Emperor energy. Because when it leans over to that type of polarity, it can't help but to deny itself the feminine. And so it's requesting the feminine energy, and for a second, vicariously can access that feminine energy within them, which they've concreted off. So to be a full human being, we have to be able to be free to explore the complexity of the self and all of these different archetypes. So sometimes you see these things like in a birthday book or numerology, or just someone's idea is like that they're like, I'm the star card, that's me, that's who I am. And you're like, yeah, cool, sure, but I feel that there are many complexes within the self, and if we don't take the journey to explore them, we're going to start feeling stifled and misdirected and not full. And anyway, that's just a little side thing. And I think some of us do in our lives represent or play a part of the bigger picture as maybe archetypally one card or the other. But I think in our private selves, we have to be open to exploring all of the different vessels to feel in full illumination at any point. So the Emperor, he is you, he is me, he is us. The things that basically, if we think of him as a harmonious figure, he's thinking about having control and command within his empire. The Emperor and the Empire are one. And this is something that I've felt for a very long time. And when you see something like, let's say, King Arthur, whose heartbreaks, you know, when his wife fucks the Knight of Cups, he starts to shrivel, and you see his health decline along with his land decline. And then they search for the golden holy grail, right? AKA the vagina, to restore the energy and the bounty of the land. The emperor and the empire are one. And he is not, however, even though everything is about boundaries, he's not an island. He's so deeply connected to his neighbors on the tarot, the three and the five, as well as the entire picture. So to see the emperor in proper healthy harmony, they have defining boundaries to establish, to grow, but they also, it's extremely unhealthy to cut off from the collective. They have their part to play within the collective, as does the archetype within you have its part to play within your inner world's collective, and how you execute those behaviors in your life. So, you know, another example of the bad emperor, and one of the reasons why I'm mentioning this is because you gotta fill up time, you know. Well, I think sometimes when you look at something that is a little bit off, it helps really let the veil slip a bit on like what the construct of what it should be when it's healthy. So when something is in its best form, it's beautiful, it's magnificent, and we just are in awe. We're like, that's great, like, look at that. But when it's a little bit off, you're starting to recognize, you just inherently know, like, okay, like, this is what is wrong here. So therefore I'm in my mind creating a stronger concept of the ideal health for this particular thing. And which old man philosopher from a million years ago, was it Socrates that was talking? I might be wrong, because my memories are slowly being deleted with time, because new ones are coming in, so I have to delete some information up in here. But there was an old philosopher who was like, there's an idea horse. There's every horse in the world, and that ever was, that ever will be. And then within every person, in their mind, there's an idea horse who lives in another realm. And from the idea horse, every other horse comes from. But every other horse that you'll ever see will never look like the fucking idea horse, right? The idea horse is a perfect image of a horse. So when you see a horse and, you know, they have something unusual about it, or let's say that they have a bandage on a knee or something like that, you're like, oh, that's not what a horse is supposed to look like. This horse has something wrong or is hurt. So when we take that same concept of the idea horse and we apply it to the tarot, and we see it happening both in the elusive, amorphous inner gases of our world of archetypes that exist within everyone's psyche, it helps to use those metaphors to kind of put shape to it. And that's exactly the job of the emperor, is to put the shapes to the amorphous. So, but it's supposed to be in a healthy way, where it does that to serve the whole. And when we see that done in the external world and properly, we see things like tyrants or cult leaders, which are kind of the same thing. You know, it's a bad boss baby. He's trying to exploit the archetype of the need for direction and the need for someone to put form to the amorphous. And they're doing it for impulsive and selfish causes and incentives. So when you see that, I think that one thing that screams to me that it's wrong, or it's not a healthy exploration of the emperor, is when it starts to segregate from the whole. So let's talk about Trump, okay? Let's use him as a great example of what it stirs up in people when they think of their idea horse of the emperor, and where he lines up and where he doesn't. And you see that happening within whatever people's worldviews are. So, for example, building the wall. That's a very archetypal exploration of the emperor. Where it gets confusing is when we say as people, like, yes, build the wall. What the fuck are you doing? Don't build a wall. That's stupid. we see the people who are like, yes, build a wall. I want to feel safe. I want to feel like there's sharp boundaries. I want to feel like we have it on lockdown so that we can thrive in our world. And that's what their yes is about. Because when they believe like the threats are real, that they can be doing their everyday thing. And because there's no defining boundaries, that some people can come in from wherever and infect their environment, then they're like, fuck that. I want to have a healthy, functional life. That's going to be a no-no on that. And of course, there's other conversations around that subject, but just for the sake of our purposes, let's move on to the polarizing viewpoint on no, let's not build a wall, because they feel I don't want to build a fucking wall. Like, I'm trying to be apolitical for some reason. Like, I'm a fucking newscaster. Like, no one gives a shit. Like, I'm gonna just clearly say that I don't believe in the wall. For many fucking reasons. But anyway, people of my camp that are like, let's not build the wall, are like, it's a waste of fucking money. If for no other reason, if for completely selfish reasons, like, let's not. And two, like, what the fuck? Like, that seems unhealthy to block ourselves off from the rest of the world and environment. Like, I don't want that. So, feeling like these different reasons, are both coming from the request and motive of having a healthy everyday life and having a healthy living environment. Like, that is the, I believe, the core interest of both sides of a single topic. That Trump even proposed to build a wall, I think, was him being like a cartoon again of what he believed a good ruler would look like. So in some ways, archetypally, he kind of nailed that, like talking about the boundaries of a specific country as an entity that needed to be very sharply defined. That is exactly what the emperor does. But the way that he approached it was so ham-fisted that when you're looking at it, you're like, this is like a diseased, dysfunctional, fucked up version of what that should be. So creating boundaries isn't a black and white, like, yes or no, in or out experience when it's done healthfully. I'm not sure if that's a word, but anyway. So for example, in our lives, when we have good boundaries within our own lives, when we are the emperor of our own private lifetime, the empire that we live in, whether it's our tiny room in a shared house, whether it's a big home with many, you know, family members within it, whether it's a condo by the beach, it doesn't matter. Like, we not only define our boundaries by who we block out, but who we let in. So for me to live a functional life, I have to say, okay, I decide who comes into my room, which is my own, you know, little world or whatever. So I can invite friends over, but I don't feel comfortable with my roommates, like, coming into my room when I'm not home, because I don't like that, you know, and that's how I feel safe in my life. So I have to establish that boundary. So by the way, that's not like a metaphor for our wall into Mexico or anything, but I guess it is, because everything's a metaphor of everything. But what I mean to say is, as individuals, oh my God, I feel like I can't shake off the political issue that I just tried to use as an example, because it's a hot topic. Everyone knows it. But now I feel like everything else I'm going to say is just about that, which it's fucking not. So, me right now, the emperor of this episode of podcast you're listening to, I'm going to put a boundary right there. I'm going to say that was that little block of the episode, and now I'm entering into a new exploration of what the emperor is, which is vaster than a single incident, even if it's a fucked up one. The concept of the emperor is much bigger. So in order for us to find the emperor within us in a healthy way, we have to do a couple things. One is define our own sense of backbone and establishing our boundaries and our needs, for the purpose of aligning with that inner emperor. And again, this is beyond genderism. We all have these forces within us. So to find our inner emperor and let them have a front row seat and a deciding factor in their particular expertise, which is boundaries that we have in our lives, we get to decide like where we have our backbone. So when we don't do this, sometimes we look for other people to tell us what our boundaries are. And also sometimes when we do this too much, we feel out of balance. And I think one of the qualities is we look to find reunion with our sexuality. So another thing that's coming to mind is like the CEO, high powered businessman that like goes in like every 2 days for his dominatrix session, you know? So he goes to a high femme to get, this is just a story, by the way, it's like a kind of a cliche story. So he wants to get that feminine energy, but he wants her to be in the position of the emperor so that he can feel comfortable shifting roles a bit to being a submissive. Also 1000% not kink shaming. That's not the point of that. I'm just saying when we, align very intensely one way or another with the strict and stiff rules of a particular archetype, we're going to look for ways to crack open that hard shell prison and let the light in a little bit this way or the other. And I mean, the truth is we're all fucking fucked. Like we're all so in the hard shell of our persona, our culture, our time, that having a little bit of solace and doing something non sequitur, I think, is our best hope to like liberate the spirit a little bit. So it's not coming from a place of judgment. It's not coming from a place of static, like you have to be defined and you have to pick your side and you have to do this or that. I don't feel like that's especially fucking helpful for anyone or healthy. So whenever you see good health, you see flow, right? So another reason why I feel like the border that, I know I said I wasn't going to talk about this again, but this is another reason why I feel like like having really intense travel bans or a stupid wall or whatever. I feel like that's so unhealthy for us as a country, because when you see good health, you see flow. But in the same way that you want to also make sure that you're discerning in like what comes through. So, God, I can't help but to feel like I'm really fucking myself over and this pinning myself in a corner to have made this political. But the reality is the emperor is fucking political. Again, the emperor is the empire. It's like, it is dominating. It is ruling over many people. It's bigger than an individual, but at the same time, we all find our position as an individual of being our own little tiny countries and like how we act, how we decide to make our own ethics and rules and actions around our beliefs, around those that we are near, how we engage with the world around us, and how we let people in. So, if you're pulling the emperor, it might be a really good time to check yourself on who you give your power to, who you butt heads with, and also how you're managing your own life and your time and your resources and your energies and your space. One little hot tip for those you butt heads with, those you disagree with, this is a really great indicator on where your boundaries lie. Yeah, no shit, right? But I think that when we get a little hot and mad, we're just like, yeah, you know, like we'll just get like fizzled out on like maybe one sticking point. And it feels so immediate that we're not maybe looking at the whole picture. And that's unfortunate, because I feel like in those little flare-ups, so much more comes to surface. And we often are looking at the red herring, which is whatever specific thing pissed us off. And we can overlook a lot of the overarching networks of concepts and realizations that are just really showing up for a second. So I would maybe, even if you're trying to work with that emperor energy, not like I'm telling you to write a manifesto or whatever, but when you get mad, I would maybe do a little journaling, not just to bitch out the person you're mad at or rage off on a particular topic, but maybe explore the feelings that you had when you got mad, as more of a introspective, like almost that you're sitting with yourself, observing the complexity of like the anger that you've found. Because within anger, there's also entitlement. And these words are so, can you just feel that word, like entitlement? It's so spicy, right? You're like, fuck you, you know, entitlement. Ugh. So we all have in our lives some space of entitlement. And again, I almost feel like it's a dirty word. It feels exciting to say your entitlement, like, oh my God, I love that word. It's so dangerous. All right. So when we get angry, that's where our entitlement lives. And that's where we find the crest of our inner emperor, our inner animus, if it would be. So entitlement, yeah, seems like a bad thing. Like, none of us should feel entitled to fucking anything, whatever. I mean, I'm a millennial, I get it. I'm going to have to, like, you know, live in a shoebox for the rest of my life if I'm lucky. But so when you have entitlement, let's say when I was a kid, I was fucking abused, and I felt very weak and little and small and worthless. But if anyone was trying to hurt one of my siblings, that's when I would get really mad, really defensive. Those were the first times I ever talked back to my mom or stepdad. And that's where I felt entitled, because I felt very protective over them. I felt like I was the one that was looking out for them. you know, I felt like I was the ones that cared for them. So when someone was being hurtful to them, I felt 100% entitled to whatever I could do to make them feel safer. So, yeah, like hashtag codependency conditioning, but, right there, that was me as a small, worthless, redheaded stepchild that had fucking buck teeth, hand-me-down clothing, like, who literally got the shit beat out of me, like, on the daily. I hadn't a thing. I was not a powerful creature. But those are the beginning blooms of feeling that emperor, that, like, these are the solid boundaries. You cannot cross this line. Which is very fierce and crazy considering, you know, my role in life. But for that is exactly what I mean, that every one of us has these archetypes within us, and we're deciding terms with these archetypes constantly. So the entitlement that I felt and the authority that I felt being like, don't talk to my sister like that, was not afraid. It was uncaring if the person was like, ooh, that's rude. You know, I 100% had confidence in whatever I was saying was the bottom line, and there was no other thing. It was very uncomplicated, you know? So in that, when I'm saying trying a journaling exercise for where you get mad is to where you find your emperor, I'm saying that not to, I think it's distracting. It's important to stand for things. It's important to have a cause. It's important to understand your exact psychology around certain topics, but I'm not completely thinking of this as a therapeutic exercise, as more an evocation of the emperor. So for me at that time, if I would have held on to that a little more, when I felt like, I don't give a shit, like, I'm going to look you right in the eyes, I'm going to square my shoulders, I'm going to tell you what's what right now. And, like, knowing full well that I could have been and was, like, beaten up, thrown out of my house, humiliated, that my life would be hell, you know, but it already was. So, like, me deciding to stand up in those small moments, if I was going to hold on to that sense of, like, don't let people fuck with you, because really what I was trying to say was, don't fuck with my sister. But, like, at the end of the day, like, the posturing was, don't fuck with me. This is what I say is going to happen. And so, therefore, that's what's going to happen. And feeling so serious about it. So that's what the emperor is. If I could have meditated on what that feeling was, instead of, like, the exact specifics of whatever else was going on, just finding myself in that glowing red ball of entitled red anger, held it there for a minute, I imagine I'd probably maybe be a little further along in life, whatever that means. But I say that that's that emperor energy. And to start to recognize what it feels like within you, I think is always good. So when we start to get a handle on the different flavors and energies, these are really like an alphabet of the soul. And with it, we can start intentionally sculpting how we walk through this world, how we feel within ourselves, how we prepare our souls for death, and how we make a positive impact in the world around us. So, again, when we're not in alignment with the emperor, then it's easy for us to be taken over and commanded by other energies. When we're not in alignment with the flow of the Emperor's place in the cosmos of our inner archetypes. We might find that it's heavy-handed or ham-fisted or lonely and isolating. But altogether, I think that understanding that need to feel entitled to your own existence and your own speech, and that you stand for yourself within a collective, I think that is the ultimate point of the Emperor and its necessity into forming good health and creating and building on those creations within the manifested realm.